today, we're keeping kind of in order of what happened right after last week. And we're looking at the fact that Jesus bridged societal gaps. Those things that kept people apart, the ways that we find ways to segment ourselves, Jesus didn't really accept that. And Jesus would reach out to people on both sides of the tracks, so to speak, so many times. We're going to be looking at two stories that are at the end of Luke 18 and at the beginning of Luke 19. And because there's this chapter separation, so often we read them separately and we don't realize that these, they're like a story that goes together. Just like last week, we had three stories in a row that were all meant to be sort of taken as a whole. This is the same thing where these two stories are all based around the same experience that Jesus is having. He's going into the city of Jericho and then leaving the city of Jericho. And they're meant to be together because they show two different parts of how society has these gaps. As we're going to go through the story, though, I'm going to try to contemporize it. So if you want to see how it was written directly in the Bible, you can look it up in the Bible like this. I am going to try to put it in what would be more like modern-day terms. So if that throws you off, you can just forget it, read the Bible story, and learn from that. But hopefully this will help make it a little more clear of what it would feel like today if Jesus did these same circumstances. So just follow me on that one. So the contemporized version is Jesus was taking like a world tour. And as he was traveling across the world, he was going to go through the United States of America. Like he was just, he's passing through. So Jesus arrives, and as he flies in, there's this huge crowd of people that are waiting to meet him because Jesus is seen as this, not necessarily a rock star, but he's this religious leader that people love and care about, similar to like the Pope or someone like that, where people, they're interested in him, they think he's this great guy. And so there's a lot of people to meet him as he's coming towards the country. We see this in the Bible story where as Jesus is heading towards Jericho, a big crowd of people, they come out to meet him and are having this sort of parade for Jesus as he's coming in, because that's the way you treat someone who's visiting, that's this honored person. That's the way you show honor. So in our updated story, Jesus, he lands at the airport and everyone's excited to see him, and there's this big crowd that's there to meet him. They want to hear what he has to say. And then Jesus is given what they call a ticker tape parade. You know what those are when you're riding on a car and there's all this confetti coming down? The same types of things that people do when they're throwing parties for the World Cup champions or things like that. This is how excited people were about Jesus. They've come out to meet him. They're treating him well. He's popular and people are loving to just get to see him. And there's a lot of excitement that's going on in the scene as he's going along, and people are talking about it, and further down the road, they're waiting, just wanting to get to see Jesus as he's coming along through the parade. And there's a blind man who's sitting by the road. Someone who, he was just sitting in his regular spot, parked on 9th and Metcalf Avenue, and there where he would beg for money. And he hears that this parade is going by. He's trying to figure out what's going on. He turns on his little radio that he's trying to listen to. And people finally tell him that Jesus is coming. And he's heard about Jesus. He's heard that this is a man who has done incredible healings, has spoken this great things. He's known as a wise man. He's this prophet, this sage. And so blind Bartimaeus is interested and thinks, maybe Jesus can do something for me. And so he just has his little cans that he's supposed to take money in, and that's the best way he can start making noise. So he just starts banging them together and shouting, "Jesus, Jesus, the Son of David, have mercy on me, Jesus." And he's trying to be as loud as he can, but there's this whole crowd in a parade, and there's music and marching bands, and it's hard to hear, but he's standing up and trying to be as loud as he can. He's not exactly sure even where Jesus is because he's blind. He can't see him, but he's yelling and yelling and yelling, and he's almost getting to a point where people are very concerned, and so they're trying to restrain him because he's being so loud and trying to push forward in the crowd, and so they call over a police officer and tell him, detain this man, keep him calm, quiet down. Just so happened the police officer had one of those megaphones on him. And so as he's trying to detain the man, Bartimaeus, he grabs a megaphone and he's using that to get even louder. "Jesus, Jesus, have mercy on me." And that's finally able to get loud enough that in the middle of this parade, in the middle of all these people excited just to see Jesus and some of them trying to touch Jesus, Jesus hears this man on a megaphone yelling, "Jesus, Jesus." And all the people have tried to shut him up, and they finally get the megaphone taken away from him, and the police are starting to take Bartimaeus away because he's caused all this racket. But then Jesus taps the driver on the shoulder and says, "Stop, stop, stop," and he's asking people, "Whoever that man was that was yelling, bring him here to me. I want to get to talk to him." And so in the middle of this parade, as everyone is excited, Jesus stops the whole parade, tells the bands to stop, tries to get everyone quiet. And someone goes and actually gets Bartimaeus and says, "Oh, cheer up. You made enough racket. You made enough noise. Jesus wants to talk to you. Come on, come on. Cheer up." And so Bartimaeus, he walks up. He's brought to Jesus. And Jesus starts with this question. "What do you want me to do for you?" Now, if I were a blind man, I'd probably start like this. "Well, look me in the eye and I'll give you three guesses. What do you think I want? Isn't this obvious?" But Jesus' question is actually a better question than we might realize. There was also a similar time when Jesus was talking to a man who was lame, and he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" And it seems like one of those, "Duh, of course I want to." But consider again the social context that he's in. This is a man who never went to school. He's never had a job. The only thing he's ever done is sat and begged. He's never had training. He never learned how to work on a car. He's never learned how to write his name. And Jesus says, "What do you want?" Because here's the thing. If he is able to start seeing, he loses a lot of the complaints he's had before in his life. He loses a lot of the excuses he could have, and it just doesn't work as well. You don't get as much money when you're not blind, but you're still asking people for money. He's going to have to change his whole life. Even the name Bartimaeus, one way of translating that means son of filth, son of garbage, son of dirtiness and grossness. I mean, this is a guy who probably couldn't shower himself or do some of those things, but if Jesus actually heals him, he's going to have to get cleaned up a bit. He's going to have to do that hard work of learning a job. People aren't just going to hand him out money anymore. Jesus asks him, "What do you want? Do you really want to have that change come in your life?" But the man says, "Yes, I want to see." And so Jesus heals this man in front of a whole crowd. When you have prayed everything that's been going on, everyone's standing there, and Jesus heals him. And this man can start seeing right there. Well, the crowd just gets excited and is like, "This is wonderful. This is incredible. A man just started seeing." And so the parade is even more excited. And everyone gets in the middle of this, and it's such a happy time. And they're still bringing him in. And the idea was that Jesus is going to be brought in. The parade is going to lead him to President Obama and the White House. Because when you have this visiting dignitary, you want him to get to meet the leaders of the town, or in this place, of the country. And so Jesus is supposed to go into the town. He's supposed to receive this wonderful hospitality. They're supposed to show off how great of a country they are. And as the parade starts again, Jesus says, "You know what, skip that. I'm actually not going to go to visit Barack Obama. I'm not going to the White House. I've changed my itinerary. I need to keep moving. I have to keep going." That's kind of a letdown. But because he just healed the guy in the middle of a crowd, everyone is still excited. And so they can kind of forgive him for the fact that he's sort of done this disgraceful thing of not accepting their hospitality, of not spending the time there. But then some of the other people, they at least go, "Well, if he's not going to spend time with one of our government officials, perhaps he'd like to meet one of our great religious men." And so they know that not far from Washington, D.C., down in North Carolina, Billy Graham has his home. And so he's supposed to go visit Billy Graham. He's supposed to be accepted into the house of this religious leader in the culture. I mean, it's Jesus. You'd think that he'd like to get to spend some time talking to a religious guy. But even with that, when Jesus says, no, I don't have time, I'm kind of skipping the United States. I'm going further, like, came in, thanks for the parade, I healed a guy, and then I'm leaving. He just continues. That is sort of the story of what happens, is Jesus is going into Jericho. They would have expected him to stay. They would have expected him to receive some hospitality. For them, it would be an honor just to have Jesus step into their house. I mean, when I've been on trips to various parts of the world, like Cambodia or Kenya or Haiti, you'll have people in a nice way kind of fighting for you to just come into their house to maybe take some of their food, because it's such an honor for them to be able to show generosity and hospitality to you. Well, when you're on a grander scale and it's this really, really important person, I mean, the city wants to put on its best face, sort of like when you have the king coming to Maastricht. They want to make sure he sees all the nicest places, goes to all the nicest things, and that's what they would have planned for Jesus. But Jesus says, no, I'm sorry, I'm not staying in Jericho. You may have had your whole dinner prepared for me in the place I'm going to stay, but no, I have to keep going. And so Jesus has, in effect, done that same thing. He passes up the rabbi, he passes up the city leadership, and he says, oh, I'm going to keep going out of the town. So, again, back in our story, Jesus has passed up Barack Obama, he's passed up Billy Graham even, and he's headed on his way, and he's flying through Los Angeles Airport on his way over to go to China. But because of the whole itinerary switch, he's running late while he's in Los Angeles, and he's going through the terminal trying to get to the gate, and there's the lady who's on the gate saying, would Jesus please appear at gate 18? Jesus, you're holding up the plane. Jesus, please show up. And so Jesus is trying to move through, and he's trying to get quickly as he's going out of it. And there's still this crowd that's met Jesus in Los Angeles because they wanted to get to see him. The same thing, and it's taking some time, but they're trying to get Jesus to come back to stay. And Jesus is saying, no, I can't, and he has to keep going. And he finally gets, he can see the gate, and he's walking up to the airport gate. But then from the middle of this crowd, Jesus sees a guy who's standing on some of the chairs, dressed in sort of this lounge jacket and some pants, but it's an older man who's standing up behind some sunglasses, hoping he won't be noticed, trying to get a look at Jesus. And Jesus sees this guy standing on the chairs, trying to get over the crowd. And then he stops and says, Hugh Hefner, come down. I changed my mind. I'm changing the itinerary. Instead of leaving, I'm going to go to your house. If you don't know who this is the man who started Playboy magazine. And he says, Hugh, you're going to throw me a party at the Playboy mansion today. And you're going to invite all your friends. So Jesus, instead of leaving, he's passed up Barack Obama. He's passed up Billy Graham. And instead, he goes to the Playboy mansion and is having this dinner party. And the kind of people that are invited are Playboy bunnies and dancers and hip-hop artists and some of the famous comedians from movies and things like that. And Jesus is in the middle of this party with people who are not the religious people. This is a very different scenario than what the people were expecting. The crowd had wanted Jesus to come see the good side of their culture, and now it's like Jesus is in the very worst place he could possibly be. And in some ways, they're mad at Jesus. In some ways, they're just mad about the situation. I remember cultures can definitely have this, where you want people to see the good part, and you want something good to happen, and it can be almost a shame to the culture if the visiting person ends up in the wrong spot. I was on a trip to Albania one time, and a guy was telling us, oh, yeah, we like America. And one time George Bush came. But then there was this very big news story that happened, because in one photo earlier in the day, President Bush had on a watch. But then in a photo later in the day, the watch wasn't there anymore. And people thought someone had stolen his watch. And that was a horrible thing. How could we have this visiting dignitary and someone steals his watch? Now he's going to think that all of Albania is horrible criminals. And this was a horrible thing. And people felt personally responsible for this bad deed. I think it ended up that he had just taken off his watch and put it in his pocket or something like that. But I mean, that's the sort of shame that would be in this situation. Jesus now has ended up at one of the dirtiest places you could be. And let's be honest. How many people are going to think, you know, Jesus went to the Playboy Mansion because he's going to tell them about God and he's going to preach a sermon for them? No. People are going to be wondering, okay, what kind of wise religious leader is this? Let's make it practical. If I ended up going to the States to visit my family and then said, oh yeah, and by the way, I stopped by the Playboy Mansion, what do you think your response would be? How many of you would think I went for the right motives? I don't know if you should think that I would have went for the right motives. And Jesus has done this. He's passed up the good things, and everyone is now unhappy because Jesus has gone to the house of the guy who's filthy rich and has spent too much time around people who weren't good. If I were Jesus' public relations specialist, this would have been horrible. Because how you started the day was going to be great, right? I mean, people were going to be like, oh, Jesus heals this blind man. Yes, he passed up the president and that, but Jesus looks like this hero. He looks like the saint, the one who cares about every individual person, and even the poorest of the poor that they were telling to shut up. Even though they were trying to oppress him, they would go, wow, this is wonderful. Jesus is this great guy who cares even about poor. And it would have been this wonderful story, and everyone would be happy. But Jesus, at the end of the day, ruins it from a public relations standpoint. First it was everyone loves him, and then now, oh, everyone hates him, and he's gone to this party of sinners. Jesus has gone to this horrible place. How could you do that? And so now, instead of it being a wonderful story, it's a scandal. Honestly, that's about how bad it would have felt like at this time. The man that Jesus went to his house, his name was Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus is a tax collector. And tax collectors aren't really like now. It was even worse then. They were like the one person that it was condoned for you to lie to them. Like, people felt like it was okay if you lie to a tax collector because they're that bad. You see, the tax collectors, they worked for the enemy. I mean, the Jews had been taken over by the Romans, and the tax collectors are Jewish people working for the Romans. They're people who have betrayed your culture. I mean, you have, like, regular people, the enemy, and our people that work with the enemy are even lower. To even step into the house of a tax collector, to sit at their table and eat their food, to sleep the night there, you would become ritually unclean. That's how they would consider it. Jesus going into his house meant Jesus shouldn't be allowed to walk into the temple the next day. He would have to take a full day just to kind of clean himself from the filthiness of walking into this house. It was that kind of scandal and shame, similar to what we would have if Jesus had gone to, say, the Playboy Mansion. Instead of having the big headline be this great story of Jesus healing a blind man, it becomes this big scandal. Because Jesus, at first, when Jesus treats poor people nice, people go, oh, that's wonderful. But when it's the rich, oppressive person, we don't like that. And Jesus, he doesn't like prejudice in either direction. Not prejudice against the poor, not prejudice against the rich. Not prejudice against black or against white or against brown or any other color. Not prejudice against men, not prejudice against women. And it happens where it can go both directions. And we get so caught up in our causes that we don't care about people. See, Jesus was very concerned about the person. And so he loved Bartimaeus, this poor man. And he loved Zacchaeus, a rich man. And whatever the people felt about those that were blind, and whatever the people felt about tax collectors, Jesus said, I'm not as concerned about your cause, I'm concerned about a person. And the sad thing is, we get that messed up so often. There are so many examples that we can have we're willing to jump on a bandwagon of whatever it is, and we get angry about the system, and so we use that to justify what we do. So there have been riots, and saying that it's justified because of their cause. And that's not the way Jesus would have acted. Jesus didn't jump on the cause of the people who said, blind people don't matter, they're lower in society because they must have sinned, and that's why they're blind, and that's why God doesn't love them. Jesus said, no, that's not the way I act. I will stop a whole parade if I have to for someone, no matter how poor or how lost they are. At the same time, Jesus would change his plans. Even if people would go, this is a horrible tax collector. He's rich. He oppresses people. He's dirty. He's sinful. All of his friends are as bad or worse than he is. There's no redeeming quality about him. He's the one that you don't want to tell your kids about. Or if you talk about, you say, don't grow up to be like that man. You demonize him. And Jesus says, I don't go for that either. I love individuals. And it was interesting to me. We get comfortable to the societal class that we're put in, whether that's kind of a financial one, of whether you're considered rich or middle class or poor. I've had plenty of times where I've seen people who were middle class that were afraid to walk into a scenario because they're, oh, this is dangerous, and just because the people are poor, just because it's a lower class neighborhood or a bad area, they'll stay away from it, just like people would have tried to keep a good distance from a blind man. But I was having a conversation this week that showed the reverse, and I appreciated the way the man said it, but it was surprising to me. He's someone he's lived a street life most of his life. He's used to that. And as we were talking, he said, Matt, I really care about poor people, about street people, about drug addicts and all of those, and like I'm used to that. Maybe I need to learn how to love normal people too. And it was just honest. That sometimes you're so used to being in one class that those that are seen as different, or those that would then be seen as the normal ones, those are the hard people for you because you're just not used to it, whatever way it is. Maybe you've grown up in an abusive family and you're really only used to dealing with people who also have those kinds of scars and wounds in their hearts, and someone who doesn't have that, you just don't like because they haven't faced what you have. And vice versa, maybe you're someone who grew up and you've had it fairly easy most of your life, and then when you come across someone who's a difficult person, you try to distance yourself from them because, you know, they're just different than we are. Jesus doesn't do that either direction. And in this time of Christmas, one of the things that's amazing to me to see is how even at Jesus' birth, even in these first few years of his life, we see how Jesus was someone who came for both sides, for all sides. He didn't even pick sides. He just said, I came for all people. Two of the groups that we know that were around Jesus in these first years of his life, we have the shepherds, right? Jesus is born, and then the angels appear to shepherds. Poor shepherds who, they don't get to be home at night. They're instead having to do the night shift of work out in the fields. And even the shepherds, the angels show up and say, your Messiah, the one you've been waiting for, has come. And these poor people are the ones that God chooses to send angels to. How incredible is that? That he has chosen these incredibly poor people, the normal people. They're not kings. They're not rich. They're not seen as the respected people of the town. They're just normal. But even there, they get to see the great news of who Jesus was. On the flip side, we have this group of guys that are called the Magi. And they would have been wealthy. And they weren't Jewish. They were outsiders. And these wealthy men who come looking for Jesus, and they go to a king, and the king says, he's not here. We didn't have a baby born here. They find out, it was in Bethlehem. So go search for him in Bethlehem. And they end up finding Jesus at what was probably just a very normal house. And even these wealthy guys are able to see that Jesus is something special. And they give him gold and frankincense and myrrh. the very rich, the very poor are all welcome. And the poor don't say, well, Jesus isn't poor enough for our liking. And the rich don't say, Jesus isn't rich enough for our liking. All they do is offer, here's Jesus. Here's the baby. Here's the one that you've been waiting for. That's why, especially this year, I want us to focus on Jesus' life, what he did, what he said, because we can have great songs and we can have great other opportunities in our church and we can do all these other things. But at the end of the day, what I want to offer just showing people, here's Jesus. Is this the kind of man that you love because of how incredible he is? Or not? And if you don't want Jesus, then you don't need the rest of Christianity. Jesus is the central part of it. So to people who in our church might be seen as the poorer ones, to people who would be seen as the richer ones, I don't really care what your background is. All I can offer is Jesus. So your Jesus life step would be to befriend someone who's outside of your economic status. For some people, that's really easy. For some people, that's really hard. We don't even know people who aren't middle class or upper middle class or lower middle class or wherever we are. I mean, for us, we're so used to just being around the people who are like us. But especially as a church, as a family, I don't care if you got a natural click with everybody. The idea is we're supposed to be the ones who make family no matter who they are. I didn't get to pick my sister or my brother. They don't have the same personality that I do. It's not always simple, but they are my family. And I don't necessarily get to choose my brother and sister in Christ, the person sitting next to me or sitting in front of me in church. But they are my family. So take even that extra step to befriend someone. And maybe that means you find someone who is in a more difficult financial spot. Or maybe it's the opposite direction. Sometimes we do judge people in that direction as well. Oh, they're probably not going to be friendly. Oh, they're going to stick their nose up at me. Find someone who would be difficult for you to talk to and do it. Make sure that when you make a friend with someone, all you're doing is becoming friends with that person to be a friend with that person. You don't become friends with them seeing what you can get out of it. That's not the goal. You become friends with someone because the person matters. So when you do this step of befriending someone, don't pick the one that you will feel like you get the most out of, whether that's getting something financially out of it or whether that's getting good feelings because I've done my good deed for the day helping this needy person. No, just love the person. Okay, so we're going to have communion today. And it's this time where we remember what Jesus has done, that he died for us. And we have bread and we have juice, and it's a reminder of his body that was broken for us, of his blood that was spilled when he was murdered for us, for all of us. And this sermon actually fits with a very strong biblical part of what happened. In 1 Corinthians 11 is one of the main spots where we look at communion. And as he's doing it, the Apostle Paul, who wrote this, he's unhappy with the people because of the way that they're doing it. And the way that they're doing it was this. There were rich people who lived in Corinth. And most likely they had their church meeting at that person's house because they had the most space. And they would have a meal that was part of this communion time. Well, all the rich people who didn't have to work late hours would get to the church meeting earlier, all the food would be laid out, and they would eat all the food and they would have the communion time already. But then the poor people who were having to work late, many of them had to work at least 12 hours. Some of them, they just would have shown up later. They weren't off earlier in the day. And so by the time that the poor people were getting to the communion time, all of it was gone. And so the rich people have stuffed themselves and the poor people are left empty. And Paul's saying, how could you do that? Don't you realize this is not about your little friend group having their great time and you leave the others out? You're supposed to be in this together. Do you despise God's church and embarrass people who don't have anything to eat? What can I say to you about that? I can't honor you in that. I can't praise you for how you're doing it. Instead, when you gather, wait for each other. And that wasn't wait the next 5 minutes to see if they would get there. That sometimes meant waiting a longer time. We don't have that often today. It's not like we have the people who show up late at church and, sorry, all the communion stuff is done. But sometimes we don't really realize, as we take communion, that is, we as family, poor or rich, we're meant to be together. Man or woman, we're meant to be together, whatever color, whatever background, that we were meant to serve one another. And that as we take this, we remember what Jesus has done, and we remember that he's done it not just for me, he's done it for you.